In this last module, we're going to talk about the virtual network service and how you can integrate with it from your Linux virtual machines. First, we'll take a look at how we can create and manage virtual networks in Azure. Then we'll make sure that the internal IPs that are assigned to our Linux VMs are static, meaning they won't change even if the machine is stopped. Afterwards, we'll create an internal load balancer for an application tier. This service will help us distribute traffic evenly between application tiers, but not from internet traffic. And finally, we'll connect this virtual network to an on-premises network. So Azure Virtual Networks is a service that serves multiple purposes. First of all, it offers protected private virtual network in the cloud. What this means is that you have unrestricted traffic between your machines in the virtual network, while also limiting traffic from the internet using the endpoints feature that we've already covered. Another scenario for using virtual networks or another feature is extending your networks in Azure. Let's say you already have applications deployed in your data center, and you want to develop new applications in the cloud while also using some of the services that are on premises. Using Azure Virtual Networks, you can connect to these two sites and have secured communications between them and look at the cloud as more like an extension of your data center than a dedicated remote service. So these two scenarios, let's look at them in a bit more detail. The first of all is what we call advanced connectivity requirements. We've already seen that if you create multiple cloud services, like we have here, we have a front-end and a back-end tier. Let's say this is a web application and that the front-end is made of web servers and that the back-end is made of database servers. Until now, if we wanted traffic to be secured, what we would do is create these two tiers, open port 80 for and 443 for the front end tier, and maybe open port 3306, that's the MySQL port, for the back end. This would make sure that traffic only to these ports will be flowing. But let's say we have to communicate on more ports, like for instance if we have a database cluster, but at the same time we don't want public access to our database tier. Well, using Azure Virtual Networks, you can place all the servers in a bubble, let's say, and only punch holes in this bubble using endpoints, but traffic within the bubble is unrestricted. So this is what advanced connectivity requirements actually means. And the second scenario is that we've already covered, of hybrid cloud or private cloud. That is, you already have your own mini cloud in your data center, you have already developed your applications. Let's say you have some central applications like your ERP, maybe your identity server, and whatever new application you develop should connect to these central services. What you will do in Azure is create a secure tunnel, create your own virtual network in Azure, connect these two premises using the site-to-site feature of the virtual networks, and then contact the Azure machines using an IP address range that's similar to the one you use on premises. You can actually import your part of your subnets to Azure. Let's go to the management portal and look at how, first of all, how you can create a network, and then how you can partition it using subnets and add virtual machines to it. We'll be looking at a new tab today. That's the network tab. I already have a virtual network created that we'll be using later, but now let's just create a new one. So you go to New Network Services Virtual Network, and you have options. quick create, which basically does what the name implies. It will just create a virtual network with a minimal set of configuration options. Custom create, the option that we'll actually be using. And the third one was import from configuration. This allows you to define an XML file, the virtual network in an XML file, and then just import it instead of clicking for the different options in the portal. Okay, let's call it Azure VNet demo, and we'll place it. Virtual networks span entire regions, so we'll place this one in West Europe. In the second step, we can choose whether we want to register specific DNS servers to the virtual networks. All the virtual machines that will be added to this network will have these DNS servers assigned. We can also go and configure a point-to-site virtual network. This means that we'll have a gateway created in Azure, and then we can have multiple clients, individual devices connecting to this virtual network. And the final option is configuring a site-to-site VPN. This is connecting two virtual networks, one that's usually on-premises and the one in Azure. Okay. At this point, we don't want to add any of these options. We'll just go with a cloud-only virtual network. And in this final step, we'll specify, first of all, what address range we want for the virtual network, and how it will be partitioned in subnets. We can use either a single address space, or you can add multiple address spaces. We'll just go ahead and use a single one. Azure has a few recommendations. Let's just quickly see them. You can do that by going to New Network Services, Quick Create, and these are the recommended address spaces for Azure VNet. You see the standard 01, the 172.16, and the 192.168. And for each of them, you can select the size of the virtual network. Now, let's quickly go back to the custom create option and finalize the virtual network creation. Okay, next. We'll select as the starting IP the 10.0.0.0, and we have to also select the size of the address space. So you can go as high as /8, which is 16 million IPs available to you, or as low as /29, 8 available IP addresses. For this demo, we'll just go and select /16. This should be more than enough for the demo. And for the next step, we'll create subnets. Okay, so a good practice is to have one subnet for each application tier. And subnets should ideally be covering a lot of the address space, maybe the entire address space. With one exception we'll talk about a bit later. So let's say we have a web tier that should be roughly, let's say, 1000 IPs. That should be enough. Let's say we also have a subnet for the workers, and it should be about the same size. You can also see the starting and ending IP addresses for the subnet. So if you are not used to the notation of slashes, /16/21, you can always see the ranges to the right. And finally, we'll create the third subnet, the DB subnet, that also spans 1024 IP addresses. As you can see, although we have 65,000 addresses, I've only covered about 3,000 and left the rest open. Even if you if if you have all the subnets planned to cover the entire address space, you should at least leave one room for one subnet of size /29 8 IP addresses, because that will be used in case you want to have point-to-site or site-to-site connectivity. It will be used by the gateway. Now let's click complete, and the virtual network should be created in a few seconds. Meanwhile, let's take a look. Oh, there we go, we have it. Let's see the information that we have available for this network. So we have the status, it's created, we have the subscription ID, the subscription we created it on, the region it was created in, and the unique ID of this virtual network. Inside this space we'll have all the Azure virtual machines inside this virtual network. We can also go to the configure tab and add DNS servers, configure point-to-site and site-to-site connectivity, or change the subnets, like for instance change the starting IP and the size of the last subnet created. Please note that you cannot create cannot change the previous subnets, you can only change the last one. You can add other address spaces or subnets, and finally you can add certificates for your point-to-site clients. Right now only Windows clients are supported for point-to-site connectivity, so that's why we won't be covering this in this course. And the last option is exporting the virtual network configuration to an XML file and then reimporting it back to Azure. So let's actually do that. I've exported this file, and let me just open it. One second. There we go. So we have, these are actually all the virtual networks that I created. So let's just take a look at the one we created now. It's this one. Okay, so we have the name of the virtual network, where it was located, the address space, and then information about all the subnets. We'll be taking a closer look at the other sections a bit later. You can make any changes here. Let's say if we want to change here this one to /21, we can do so. We can then save this file and then go to new network services, virtual network, import configuration, and we can then select the file and it will make all the necessary changes to the virtual network. Okay, now that we have this created, one last step in order to use the virtual network is to actually create a virtual machine inside this network. For that, we'll go to the normal virtual machine creation process. We'll select from gallery and let's go for an Ubuntu machine as usual. 1410. We'll call it like this. I already have a machine created that we'll be using, but we'll go through the process quickly again. Let's say we'll use an existing cloud service. In fact, let's just create a new one to use a new virtual network. You cannot, if you already, if you select an existing cloud service, it will force you to use one of the existing virtual networks that was already selected. We won't be using that. Okay, so we enter the cloud service name, and then we'll say Azure VNet Demo as the host of our machine. We've already seen the regions part in the first module. Now we have additional options as virtual network. And once you select the virtual network, it will ask you where, in which subnet you want to place this virtual machine. We'll say web subnet, and then the rest of the process is identical to what we've seen before. Okay, because I already have one of these machines created, I'll go to virtual machines. Let me just show you what's different about this machine. So, first of all, internal IP address. This is using the address range that we defined in the subnet for this machine. And you can see the subnet for this one was starting from 10.0.0.0, and the first IP address assigned was 10.0.0.4. That's because Azure reserves the first three IP addresses of each subnet for internal purposes, and you IP addresses for you are allocated starting from the fourth IP address. So the first machine in this case is 10.0.0.4, the second one is 10.0.0.5, and so forth. Okay, and another thing, if we go to virtual networks, to this network where the machine was created in, you will see that we have information about all the machines running in this virtual network. Okay, now let's go back to the slides and see our next demo, which is using static internal IPs. Let's head back to the portal and change the virtual IP, internal IP of the machine we just saw. So again, we have this virtual machine. The internal IP address assigned was 10.0.0.4, the first available in the pool for this subnet. Let's say this is a special purpose server and that we have a specific IP assigned to it whenever it is started, and that this IP is not allocated to another machine. In order to do that, we'll be using PowerShell. I'll open up my PowerShell ISE and we'll have to issue a set of commands. So you have two options. You can either have an existing machine moved to a specific IP address. The machine will be restarted in the process. Or the second option, of course, is you can create a new machine and set the static IP address when you create the machine. For both scenarios, the same command is applied. So let's start with the first one. Let me zoom in. So we have get Azure VM. You provide the name of the virtual machine that you want to retrieve and the service name of the cloud service where it is hosted in, and then we pipe this to another command that changes the virtual machine. In our case, we say, okay, let's just set the VNet IP to a static IP, and we provide the IP, and then this changed object, which is passed to update Azure VM, that will take the new configuration and apply it to the machine and restart the machine in the process. So let's do that. Okay, this should, okay, it's already starting. And while this is executing, let's see how you would do it if you wanna create a machine from scratch. So like I said, it's pretty much identical. We already created a machine previously. We just say new Azure. So autocomplete doesn't seem to be working. Anyways, you just create a new Azure VM configuration like this, and then you provide the details. You pipe it into something like add Azure endpoint, and again provide the details, and you can add other commands like set subnet. And one of these steps is setting the virtual IP address. So we'll be doing this actually, just issue each command on its own line. Yeah, and finally this is returned as a VM object, and you can either say something like new Azure VM from this VM object, or you can just pipe this last object into a new Azure VM like this. Okay, good. Apparently the operation is successful. Let's head back to the portal and see how the machine. Okay, so we have the machine in the status of, I think it was starting. Yes, it's starting. It was restarted, and the new IP address assigned to it. And that's all there is to it. All you have to do is just issue that command, wait for the machine to restart, and then you'll have the internal IP address fixed. Now, if you stop the machine and you start it again, you don't have to do it via PowerShell. You can just do it via the portal. The setting will be saved in the machine settings, so you only have to do it once via PowerShell. This is it for static IPs. Let's move on to internal load balancer. Let's revisit the load balancing concept a bit. So, as you can see from this image, we have a client connecting via port 443 to a cloud service called WebTier, hosting multiple VMs. We have a load balanced endpoint there, endpoint 443. That's a public load balancer. We've already covered it, the load balanced endpoints. And whenever a new request comes, depending on the hash that's computed for that request, it will get directed to one of the free machines. What if we have another tier, like a database tier, that we also want to load balance traffic to? Well, of course, we can create a new cloud service. We can add a load balanced endpoint to it and just have the VMs connect to that cloud service. However, there are multiple issues with this approach. First of all, is that when you create the load balanced endpoint, you also allow internet traffic. Of course, you can start filtering IP addresses and only allow IP addresses from the web tier, but that's a bit too complex. The second issue is about performance. Because if you have the virtual machines connecting to the public endpoint, and the public cloud service DNS name, again, you might have some issues with resolving the DNS entry every time. You might have to sometimes go via a suboptimal network route. So what you would ideally want is to have something like an internal IP that you can connect to, that's fixed, and that only allows traffic from within your virtual networks. That's where the internal load balancer concept comes in. So we have here in this second tier, let's just split it like this. Let's say we have a virtual network with two subnets. The first subnet is the web subnet, aka the web tier, and the second one is the database subnet. For the first subnet, we also created a load balanced endpoint. Please note, this is not part of the virtual network. And for the second one, we added this new internal load balancer. So how does this behave? First of all, the internal load balancer is part of the virtual network, so it takes up an IP address within a subnet. And secondly, it only allows traffic to flow from that virtual network to the virtual machines behind it. Apart from that, it behaves pretty much in the same way. You have endpoints, you have a load balanced endpoint that you define. Unfortunately, you cannot see it here because of the drawings. In fact, let's take it like this. So we have a load balanced endpoint that we defined, 0.1433, and then each machine has this endpoint added, and it's registered with the load balancer. So when traffic comes from the VMs in the web tier, It goes to the internal load balancer, and the load balancer decides to which machines it will send the requests to. Additionally, it will also take care of the health checks, meaning it will remove the machines from rotation whenever they're not found to be healthy in healthy state, and it will also automatically add machines when you register the machine with the load balancer. Alright, now let's go to the portal and actually see how we can create a load balancer. In our case, we'll be having an internal load balancer in front of two database machines, and then how we can connect with from our web tier. Meanwhile, I've created two new virtual machines, DBVNet01 with an internal IP address of 10.0.2.5 and DBVNet02 with an internal IP address of 10.0.2.6. Now, in order to use these machines from the web server, we'll have to create the internal load balancer first. For that, I'll be using PowerShell again. And the command to issue is new internal load balancer. We'll first create a configuration for the internal load balancer, and then we will add the load balancer to the cloud service. So first, we issue new Azure internal load balancer config, and with the parameters, first the internal load balancer name. Let's just call it MySQL internal load balancer, because that's what we'll be using it for. We'll have to provide a name for the subnet in which this load balancer will be added. And optionally, we can provide a static VNet IP address. My recommendation is that you always provide this static address, because the internal load balancer behaves in pretty much the same way as cloud services, meaning that the IP address can be released if there are no more virtual machines behind it. And then I'll add the internal load balancer to a service using this configuration. I'll issue this command, and then we'll talk a bit more about this load balancer. So unfortunately, you cannot add the load balancer before you create the virtual machines, at least one of the virtual machines that you want to add behind him. That's because if you want to create an internal load balancer and you have no deployments in the service that you add the load balancer to, it will just say that there are no deployments there and the load balancer cannot be created. So the first thing you need to do is create a virtual machine, then create the load balancer, then add the load balancer endpoint to that virtual machine. So our load balancer is created. Well, another thing to keep in mind is that this load balancer uses an IP address of the from the subnet you specified. And again, ideally, you should just have it as your first IP address in the subnet. Of course, you can provide any IP address, but it's probably best if it's the best, it's the first one. Okay, now we'll have the load balanced endpoint added to a virtual machine. So first, I'll issue the command, and then we'll look over it. So, first things first, we issue a get Azure VM command. This will return a VM object for us with the configuration of the virtual machine that's specified. And we want the virtual machine that's called DBVNet01 from the service Azure DBVNet. Then, on this object, we'll create an endpoint. We'll give it the name MySQL. We'll tell it that it should be a load balanced endpoint, and the endpoint set name should be MySQL. The protocol is TCP. The local and public ports are both 3306. we'll add the default probe. This is the probe that's periodically checking the virtual machines behind the load balancer and make sure that they're taken out of rotation if one of the machines does not respond. And finally, this is what's different from other load balance endpoints. We give it the name of the internal load balancer that we want to add this machine behind. So because I changed the name, I'll also provide a new name here. Finally, what we'll do is with this changed configuration, we'll call update Azure VM that will just go to Azure and insert this new configuration to the virtual machine. Because this is a rather minor configuration, the machine will not be restarted. It will just be unavailable for a few seconds while the endpoints are updated. So let's wait while this finishes. Meanwhile, let's issue another command. After this finishes, we'll again get the details for this Azure virtual machine. And next, we'll also get all the endpoints. And this is how we'll check that the endpoints were added successfully. It should be done in a few seconds. Let's go in the portal meanwhile and see what the state of the machine is. So right now the machine is running, we'll refresh. It completed meanwhile. So the status in the portal should be running as well. Okay, so this is loading. Let's issue the get Azure endpoint. Good. So for this machine, we now have two endpoints. First of all, we have the newly added load balanced endpoint with the name. We provided the ports and the virtual IP, the internal IP that we'll use to connect to this internal load balancer. Then we have the probe information, like what port is checked for a machine health, so and what protocol used. So what this means is that the probe will periodically check via TCP ping on port 3306, and it will do that every 15 seconds. And the other endpoint is the one that was added by default when I created the machine. It is the SSH endpoint. Okay, now let's do the same for the second machine. So we'll take this command and we'll just run it. While this is executing, let's log into the web virtual machine and test the connectivity to the first of all to each of these DB machines and then to the internal load balancer. So let's go to the web machine and see the connection details. Okay, port 22. First, let's check that we can reach the machines via ping. So it was 10.0.2.5. Everything seems to be okay. And 10.0.2.6. Again, we can reach both of these machines. Next, we'll want to make sure that MySQL is running on each of them. So I'll run MySQL. I've created a special user called Azure User. I'll connect to the 10.0.2.5 host. And I'll have to provide a password. And there we go. We're connected. We have these databases. And let's see what the host name is. We are in DB VNet 01. Good. Now let's do the same for the second machine, 10.0.2.6. Again, show databases, the same databases, and the host name is now dbvnet02. Once the second machine is added to the load balancer, there we go, it's done. Let's also check that the endpoint was added. And if this was successful, we should be able to connect to the load balancer and then get randomly allocated one of these machines. So it was successful. We have the MySQL internal load balance port with almost the same configuration as on the first machine. Good. Now let's try to first ping the internal load balancer IP. So this doesn't work, but let's connect to the using the MySQL protocol, because we open port 3306 on this internal load balancer. Okay, so I'll provide it a host name. This time I'll be using the IP of the internal load balancer, and I'll provide it a password as well. And there we go, we are connected to MySQL. Let's see, first we gotta make sure that the same databases are there, and they are. And let's see on which machine we've got allocated. So show variables like host. Now I'm on dbvnet02. Good. Let's exit and see if we can land on a different machine. This time I'm on dbvnet01. Good. Now, let's simulate a failure on one of these machines. I'll do that pretty easily by just, instead of failing a machine and then waiting for it to be removed, I'll just force a removal by getting the Azure VM and then remove Azure endpoint. I'll just remove the endpoint from the load balancer. Let's remove dbvnet02. The name of the load of the endpoint that we'll be removing is MySQL, and then we'll have to update Azure VM. Okay. Let's see if this works. Meanwhile, we should head back to the web machine and keep connecting, see how it behaves. We should have almost no disruption in our service while this is happening, while the machine is removed from the internal load balancer. So right now I'm on dbvnet02, and if I keep connecting, I should at one point only land on dbvnet01. Meanwhile, let's see. Okay, now I'm on dbvnet02 again. And okay, you should probably wait for this to finish before testing again. Looks like it's done. Now let's head back to the web machine and try to connect again to the internal load balancer. And now we're on dbvnet01, and let's try it again. We should probably just try it three times. Again, dbvnet01, and one last time, dbvnet01. And if I add the load balanced endpoint again, it will be picked up in a few seconds after the operation is done, and we'll connect to either of the two machines again. So this is it for internal load balanced endpoints. We're done configuring the virtual network in Azure. But what if we have some services in our on-premises data center and we want to connect to those? For example, if we have an identity server like Active Directory, even us Linux users use Active Directory a lot. Ideally for, let's say, internet applications that we develop in the cloud, we want to use the same users as the ones in Active Directory instead of creating an identity module for each of the applications we develop. Additionally, maybe we don't want to expose the Active Directory server to the public internet. So we'd want a secure channel to connect the cloud and the on-premises data center. Luckily, we have something like that in Azure. It's called site-to-site connectivity, and it allows you to create a VPN connection between the cloud and your data center. How it does it is by creating a gateway in Azure, then providing you with the configuration details of what you need to do on your specific router that's facing the internet. And once you're done with that configuration, you can just connect via a VPN tunnel and have secured communication between these two sites without interference from the public internet. But if you don't have such a site, your own data center, maybe you just have some clients that you want to use, some individual devices that you want to use to connect to the cloud, but you don't want, again, you don't want to do it via the public internet, but rather via a secure channel on the internet, you can do that using point-to-site connectivity. What this does is create the gateway in Azure. This is the same gateway that you can use for site-to-site connectivity as well. And then you have a Windows application that you can install that will configure a VPN tunnel between your individual device and Azure. Unfortunately, this doesn't run on Linux at the moment, so you can only have Windows clients connecting to the Azure VNet. That's why we won't be covering it today. We'll just look at site-to-site connectivity. If you don't want to use the public internet for going from your data center to Azure, you can use a service called ExpressRoute that creates a private connection between your data center and Azure using one of the operators offering dedicated connectivity. For instance, you have AT&T, BT, Equinox, Level 3. There are quite a few covering especially the US, but Europe and parts of Asia as well. Again, we won't be covering this today, but if you ever need connectivity with predictable performance and that's on a separate channel from the internet, you can always go to ExpressRoute. Now let's go to the portal and create such a site-to-site connection. In our case, I've created already on-premises router running Windows Server, and in the Azure cloud we'll be using the virtual network that we already created to connect it to this on-premises router. Back to our networks tab, we have two virtual networks created. The first one is Azure VNet Connect that we created during this module, and the second one is site-to-site demo that I created previously. All our resources are deployed in this Azure Virtual Network site-to-site demo. Because this already has the Azure Gateway created, we'll go ahead and go through the process for the EMT VNet as well. Before we do that, we first have to define the networks that we want to connect to. And these are defined in the Local Networks tab. We already have such a network. Let's look at it first and then go create a new one. Each local network has a name, an address space that you want to import. This will be the address space that you can use from Azure on the local network. So for instance, if you have a larger address space in your on-premises network and you only want to import part of it, you can define which part of it you want here. Then the gateway address for your router. This is where Azure will try to connect. This must be a internet facing IP address. This is where Azure will connect in order to create the VPN tunnel. And finally, we have the subscription that this local network is assigned to. Let's also try to create a new local network. We will be using the one that's already created, but just for demonstration purposes, we'll create a new one. So, new network services, virtual network, add local network. We have to specify the name. Let's call it another local network. Then we have to provide the public IP of the gateway device that we have on premises. Let's just put in a random IP. And then we specify the address spaces that we want to import from on-premises. In fact, that we want to make visible from our on-premises network. And let's just pick a random one. This one slash 16, let's say. Okay. And we can see here the usable address range that will be accessible from Azure. And then we just check the complete button, and this will be created in a few seconds. But because we already have local network, let's go ahead and configure the gateway in Azure in order to connect to this network. Right now, in our network graph, you only have the Azure Virtual Network. So we can add resources to it, but it doesn't know anything about any remote sites. In order to allow you to connect to this remote site, we must go to the Configure tab and check that we want to connect to a local network, and then we specify which local network that we defined we want to connect to. Once you check this, you also see that there is a new subnet added to your virtual network, and that's the gateway subnet. This will be used by Azure in order to provide connectivity to your on-premises network. Let's click save and talk about the gateway meanwhile. Okay, so this is a pretty small subnet. As you can see, it's a slash 29 subnet, meaning 8 IP addresses with only 3 of them usable. And Azure will use this to add 2 virtual machines to it. These are the gateway virtual machines, and they run in active-passive mode. And they do that in order to ensure that your VPN tunnel is highly available, meaning if one of the machines goes down, the other one will pick up the traffic for you. Okay, this operation normally takes a few seconds. Once it is done, we should be able to see that the network graph is updated and that we have a local network that we can connect to added. There we go. So the network graph was updated. Let's take a look at it again. We have the Azure Virtual Network with no gateway created. So we cannot actually connect to an on-premises network yet, but it says that we want to connect to this on-premises network and that at the moment connectivity is down, as you can see from this line that's interrupted here between the two sites. Next step, obviously, is to create a gateway on the Azure side and then attempt to connect from the on-premises network. All you have to do is click Create Gateway. We'll go ahead and use dynamic routing as the option. Okay. And what this will do is it will also update the network graph for us. It says that it's creating the gateway. The color for the gateway side of the graph turned from red to yellow, meaning that it's now creating, and once this is done, it should turn to blue, meaning that the gateway is created, and all we have to do is just configure the on-premises gateway to also connect to Azure. This usually takes about 30 minutes, and because this is quite a while, we'll go ahead and use another gateway created in the site-to-site demo network. So let's look at it here. In this network, we have the Azure network, the on-premises network, the gateway that's already created, and as you can see, this is a continuous line, meaning that there is a connection established between the two sites. And we can also see some other details that have popped up here. How much data has been in and out of Azure, and the public IP address of the Azure Gateway. Now, let's actually take a look at how we can configure our on-premises gateway. And in order to do that, let's first look at what we use as our on-premises gateway and how we can configure it using the download VPN device script option. So, as soon as you specify that you want to connect to a local network, you'll have this new option, download VPN device script. If you click on it before the gateway is created, it will just provide you with a script that you have to run on premises, but you have to fill in all the details because Azure doesn't yet know the details for the gateway. However, if you download it after gateway is created, and I recommend that you do so, you'll have all the details filled in for you, and all you have to do is run this script. So let's actually download this VPN device script. For our on-premises network, we can have routers from either Cisco, Juniper Network, or we can go with a software router from Microsoft. This is what I have done. I've just created a Windows Server machine running RRAS. It's running Windows Server 2012 R2. Okay, let's check this, and it will give us PowerShell script that we have to run on that machine. Okay, there we go. Now let's go and see that machine. I also have this on the Azure account. It's actually just a machine in Azure running outside the virtual network. So this is it, on-prem gateway, I called it. And the public virtual IP address here, from here, is just the IP address that we mentioned as the gateway for the local network. Okay, so let's log into this machine and see how we can configure it. I won't insist a lot on the details because probably most of you use some form of a Linux router, but just for demo purposes, if you want to use software routing, you can just start a Windows machine and configure it. Okay, now I'll connect via remote desktop. 1 second. There we go. Okay, so on this machine, I have set up a few things. I've copied the VPN device script and I've renamed it to .ps1, so I can easily run it using PowerShell. Now, let's start Windows PowerShell and look at what the VPN device script actually does. But before we do that, let's also go to routing and remote access. This is the service used to establish connectivity, VPN connectivity. And because we already have connectivity to the cloud, I'll first remove it entirely. There we go, this is the connection. I'll delete it so that we can create it from scratch again. So this is the PowerShell script. And let's load up the script that Azure provides to us. I'll show you this because it's pretty similar to what you'll get for a Cisco or a Juniper Networks router. The steps are pretty much the same apart from installing the RRAS service on Windows. So let's quickly go through it. It will just install the Windows feature remote access, and then it will add the routing feature. And then it will just create an interface used for the VPN tunnel, and we'll set the details such as the shared secret provided by the Azure interface, and finally it will add some other settings. One thing I have changed from the default script, and that you also have to keep in mind when configuring your router, is that you have to properly define the IP address range. In my case, this machine was configured previously to just get it its IP address automatically, and it didn't know about this IP address range that I defined for the virtual network, and it got some other IP address. So I was forced to set the IP address to something that's within the range specified in my local network in Azure. All right, let's run this script and see what happens. Most of the features in Windows were already installed. I did this previously because it takes quite a while. And while this runs, let's go back to the portal a bit and see what the status of the connection is. Yeah, so this is the machine. Back to the networks tab, site-to-site demo, and there we go. It says that we no longer have connectivity because I deleted the connection on the on-premises side. Now let's try to establish the connection again. Looks like there are some issues. Let's run this last part of the script meanwhile. Okay, now apparently it was unable to execute this command, but this is not an issue. We'll run it manually. Now let's look at routing and remote access, and we see that we have this new interface, Azure S2S. This is the name I provided. Normally Azure just calls it the name of the public IP address of the Azure Gateway. And then you should also have in IPv4, you'll have this interface as well with the IP address. As you can see, the IP address here is 0.0.0.0. We'll change it to something that's compatible with what the Azure Gateway, with what the local address namespace was. And in static routes, we see that we've already had imported for us the IP address, internal IP addresses of the Azure virtual network. So we can actually start pinging these machines as soon as we fix the IP. So let's go back here. One second. I'll just fix this and get back in a moment. There we go. So this was set to obtain the IP address automatically. I actually want to have it use a specific IP address that's compatible with what I defined as the local network. Let's say 100. Good. Now let's disconnect. Connect again. And now if we go to the Azure Management Portal, okay, and click on Connect to attempt a connection, hopefully the graph will be updated to show us that we have connectivity between the two premises. Okay, it should take no more than a few seconds. There we go. So we have the connection established again. Now let's look at one of the machines that's running and try to ping it from our on-premises machine. So let's look at the virtual machines and choose one of our liking. Web VNet 01 sounds good. Let's look at its IP addresses, 10.0.0.10. Let's go to the Windows machine and try to ping this one. One second. Fortunately, this is running in windowed mode, and it's a bit difficult to get access to the console. There we go. First of all, let's look at the IP interface, at the network interfaces, and make sure that the IP address was picked up. There we go. So the IP address was changed and we have connectivity. Now let's clear this and try to ping 10.0.0.10. There we go, yes. So we have a reply. We can now ping it either from Azure or from our on-premises network, and we have secure connectivity between these two sites. We can start using services from one in the other. And like I said, if you're using a Cisco router or a Juniper Networks router, it's almost the same thing. But because setting up a software router is so easy, even though it's Windows, I preferred going this way. So, with that being said, let's take a final look at our virtual networks, and then wrap up this module. Finally, let's take a look at name resolution in Azure. If you have virtual machines running in cloud services outside virtual networks, you can use the internal IP address only for the instances in the same cloud service. So, internal IP addresses are allocated for machines regardless if they're in a virtual network or not, but you can only use them either if you're in a virtual network or if you're outside the virtual network, only for the instances inside the same cloud service. And for these virtual machines that are in cloud services outside VNets, the primary way to contact the virtual machines is via the VIP, the public IP address of the cloud service, and the ports that are opened for the machines behind the cloud service. However, if you have machines running in virtual networks, you can use internal IP address however you like between these machines. You can have site-to-site connectivity and even use the internal IP addresses that you have on premises or from your on-premises network. You can use the internal IP address from the Azure machines. And additionally, you can bring your own DNS server. So let's say that you have DNS server already on-premises. You can use that one if you like to. When you create the virtual network, you just have to specify the internal IP address of that DNS server. And when you create a machine there, meaning in Azure, it will automatically have the DNS server assigned to it, and you will be able to use your internal name resolution scheme even for Azure machines. Okay, so this was about it for the entire course. Hopefully, you will try running Linux on Azure now. There is a pretty big community behind Linux on Azure now. Like I've said in the beginning, there are about 20% of the virtual machines running in Azure now are Linux VMs. And what can I say? Thank you for attending this course, and see you again soon.